Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. We're delighted to be with Dr. Alan Wallace. Bill Russell, you have that look.
As far as I know, the United States is the only country that has enshrined the notion of happiness in its its founding documents. Mm-hmm. So there's not only the normal human tendency, there's sort of a general cultural, political will to happiness. Mm-hmm. And yet, the circumstances you described sound, and I don't disagree with them, as virtually the embodiment of the antithesis of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Would that be misery?
Is this a failure of understanding, a failure of communication, bad judgment, or are we just sort of lost?
Oh, I think all of the above would be a good place to start.
Yes.
Especially since the rise of modernity, and this is the discovery of the new world, this is the Protestant ethic, this is the rise of modern science. So many of the salient features that launched modernity, which we can no longer call a Western phenomenon, because it's in Tokyo and Beijing and Singapore and Buenos Aires, it is now global. But so many of the salient features that have defined modernity are extroverted. That is, we're looking outwards. We're looking out to the new world. We're looking out to new resources, new places to conquer, new places to enrich ourselves. The Protestant ethic is looking outwards to doing good works, accomplishing a lot in the world. Science, from the time of Copernicus, is looking outwards. It's always looked outwards. This is why it has this ideal of objectivity, not an ideal of sublime subjectivity. When we so get so fixated on the outwards, then we even turn the inwards into the outwards, where we think that human experience, our thoughts, our emotions, our very consciousness itself, if they're real, they too must be something outwards. So we identify them with brain functions. We identify them with behavior. Because if it's not outwards, it must be not existent at all. Now, William James said, "For the moment, what we attend to is reality." One of my favorite quotes. For the moment, what we attend to is reality. And for the last 400 years of moments, modernity has been focusing outwards. Well, if that's where your attention is gazed, fixed for 400 years, even when it comes to studying the mind, sure, I'll study the mind. I'll study your mind by way of your brain, your behavior, your articulation, your facial expression. When your attention is so fixated on the outward, then when it comes time to find happiness, where do you think you're going to look for it? You have no options. You've got blinkers on, and you're going to look outwards. And of course, we don't find happiness outwards, but we find one heck of a lot of symbols. How big is your bank account? How many credentials do you have after your name? How many buildings do you have named after you? How many people love and respect you? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Some of this sounds like materialism, and materialism is one of the indictments of modern American and Western culture and increasingly the world. But what you're talking about is bigger than materialism. This is much more encompassing. It is in many ways much more dangerous and much harder to deal with.
I think there are a lot of people who fall into this kind of myopia that don't regard themselves as materialists. They may regard themselves as religious fundamentalists and still be as extrospective, as focused on the outwards as anybody else. So yeah, it's much broader than any particular philosophical school or any particular interpretation of science. But now religion has often been condemned, and to a large degree rightly so, for getting caught up in ritual, and then the rituals turn dry, and all you're holding on to for your religion are a bunch of dry husks that used to symbolize something, but now you just have the shell. And so we know this is true. Rituals can be, by definition, I think they can become empty rituals. That's kind of their natural devolution. But religious people are not the only people who fall to that. And I think what we have now are rituals of happiness, symbols of happiness that people cling to, thinking, if I have that, certainly I must be happy, because look, I've got the ritual. Look at my house. Look at my car. And look at my wristwatch. And look at my et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we get caught up in these external symbols, these ritual acts of happiness, and we may not even notice that the one thing that has slipped through our fingers is that for which all those symbols and rituals actually stand, and that is an actual feeling of flourishing, of well-being and happiness.
We characterize ourselves immodestly as Homo sapien, man the wise, And what you're describing would seem to be anything but. This suggests that we are not functionally as clever as perhaps we claim to be, or even, and I think this is your point, as we could be.
I think that's certainly true. I mean, we have the capacity for wisdom, and we have the capacity for virtue. We have the capacity for genuine happiness. Whether we tap into that capacity or get completely fixated on the external trappings of that is an open question. But in this regard in particular, it strikes me that the 20th century presents us with one of the strongest anomalies in human history. Specifically this. It's like the koan for the era. And that is the 20th century displayed, especially, I mean, overwhelmingly through science, the greatest increase in human knowledge and power that the human species had ever seen. I mean, you have a curve going back 10,000, 100,000, 500,000 years, and you see it flat, 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 and then gradually growing. And they get 20th century, and you've got virtually a vertical line there in terms of growth of knowledge and power. That sounds really good. I mean, the more we know, the more we should know how to flourish and be happy and be living in harmony with our environment and getting along with each other and really knowing what makes us truly happy. I mean, we know so much now. And yet, that's one half of the koan. And the other half of the koan is in terms of environmental degradation and man's inhumanity against man. The 20th century trumps all of the preceding centuries with basically no competition. So how is it that we could so wildly and violently degrade our own environment, wipe out so many species, and show such a mind-boggling inhumanity of man against man? How could we do that in the same century in which we know more and we're more powerful than we've ever been in the past? That is, I think, the anomaly for the 20th century. If we don't solve that one, then our civilization as we know it will not be something that we're looking at in the 22nd century.
It's not just civilization, it's the species.
It's the whole. And unfortunately, and this is when I was going to be an environmentalist when I was in my teens, I thought, well, okay, we humans, we are real screw-ups here. But doggone it, you know, we should only be able to ruin ourselves. We don't have the right. I mean, if I'm living in a home, if I want to trash my home, well, okay, I'm really a fool. But that's kind of like, okay, well, it's your home. But it's really quite not fair, to use a silly old-fashioned term. It's just not quite fair that we could so butcher the environment that it's not only the human species and human civilization that suffers, but basically all the species down to maybe microbes are going to be experiencing the brunt of our stupidity, our greed. We have to be more responsible than that.
Do you regularly talk, almost as an historian of science, you talk about hypotheses. As you look at these twin, the koan, as you would, do you have a hypothesis of how we proceed to get out of this pretty dark place?
Sure. If we don't have hypotheses, then we're stuck in repeating the past. So I think what we really need here is vision. We don't need necessarily more of an information glut, but we do need to have a renaissance of wisdom. And I think we really are in dire and urgent need of a renaissance. But we can take inspiration from the last great renaissance, the 15th century, the 16th century, this great birth of modernity, which is, of course, has tremendous advantages, great successes, discoveries, boons, modern medicine being one of many. But if we look for the catalysts, there was a profound challenging of authority that had been largely unquestioned for centuries because it seemed on one level to work so well. That's one thing we need. But now it's not a challenging the authority of a church. It's not challenging the authority of the Greeks. It's challenging the authority that is, for example, expounded by our major universities and our governments and other institutions of power, business, and so forth.
Which are all linked.
They're all profoundly interlinked. They're all fueling each other. To be challenging the authority there, the mainstream, the status quo, the received wisdom, a challenging of that. But that's not enough. That could lead us just anarchy. But in addition to that, to draw inspiration from earlier civilizations that in some respects really had their act together and in some ways had their act together much better than we do now. So in the 16th century, the 15th century, 16th century, they were drawing inspiration from the Arabic culture, which had, you know, had its golden era, which was very, very bright. They were drawing inspiration from the Greeks, unearthing manuscripts and so forth they had not known about for centuries. And so they were tapping into the wisdom of the Mediterranean basin, and that catalyzed fresh ideas. Well, now, happily, with our transportation, with our communication, we can now tap into the wisdom of the world. We're not confined to the Mediterranean basin anymore. This very famous statement by Einstein, the mind that creates the problem is not the mind to solve the problem. I'm paraphrasing, of course. We better look outside of our boxes and recognize there have been other great civilizations on this planet that are equally old or older than our own. And they have their own wisdom. And in evaluating it, we have to evaluate it all afresh and not simply evaluate it in terms of, have you gotten as far as we have?
Or have you come to the same conclusions we have, which Precisely. Will make you right?
Precisely. Yeah.
We have the pleasure to be with Alan Wallace here on The Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I invite you to return when we all three come back in just a moment.